Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage. All the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
Welcome to the Billboard Chappie Podcast. Gary Truss, Billboard Senior Director of Charts.
Gary got a promotion, new title.
I think it just means I'm older.
And I am still Trevor Anderson, still a chart manager here at Billboard.
Does it mean I get senior specials now?
Before 6, 10% discount.
And this is where we look at why what's on the charts is on the charts. And this week, talking to someone who has been all over the charts in recent years, Justin Tranter, Grammy-nominated songwriter. Just won Songwriter of the Year at the 2018 BMI Pop Music Awards for the second straight year. Also took home 4 more awards for co-writing hits by Imagine Dragons, Believer, Linkin Park's Heavy, Julia Michaels' Issues, and Maroon 5's Cold. So we're going to talk to Justin about his songwriting, really so much more, just a really fun chat that we had with him. So that's coming up. We're going to split it into 2 pieces over a couple weeks. Really just even beyond his songwriting, Trevor, one of the things that we found speaking with Justin, just how important his social activism is.
Yeah, he's really somebody who's dedicated to a lot of causes. He was even at, when he's at the BMI Awards, wore a shirt that said "We can end gun violence now." So really rallying behind that cause. It's been a big fixture in the LGBT community as well for a number of years. And of course, given the fact that it's Pride Month, that much more appropriate to highlight somebody in that community who's doing major things and making some huge inroads for members of that community.
And we'll run down the top 10 of this week's Billboard Hot 100 coming up, and our flashback this week, Trevor.
We are going to take it back to 2002. We're going to look at a song that was hitting the top 5 of the Hot 100, this time 16 years ago. We'll play a little name game. It's got something very much in common with the song currently in the top 10 as well. And we'll look at a few more examples of some things they have in common.
All right, here's this week's top 10 on the Billboard Hot 100.
10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
If it's meant to be, it'll be.
Number 10.
Baby, if it's meant to be.
Yeah. If it's meant to be.
It'll be.
It'll be.
Baby, if it's meant to be. If it's meant to be.
Number 9. Number 7.
I still see your shadows in my room. Can't take back the love that I gave you.
Number 6.
It's to the point why I love and I hate you, and I cannot change you, so I must replace you. Oh, easier said than
like you go for you. Me do what I want when
Number
I'm
5.
Through, I need a girl like you. Yeah.
God's plan.
Number four.
I can't do this on my own. Hey, no. Hey. Someone watching this shit close. Yup, yeah, close. I've been me since Scarlet Road. Hey, bro.
Said I look it like that.
Number three.
Psycho, little mama bad like Michael. Can't really trust nobody.
Number two.
With all this jewelry on you, my roof look like a no-show. Got diamonds by the bolo. Come with the Tony Romo for clowns and all the
that's a real one in your reflection. Without a
flaw, and number one.
Without a mission, you really piping up on these niggas. You gotta be nice for what to these niggas? I understand.
All right, we've seen that number one spot change hands a good number of times in the past few weeks. This week, no exception. We're back to Drake taking over once again with the song Nice For What. This is its seventh time overall being number one. If you guys remember, it debuted at number one a few months ago, had that for four straight weeks, lost out that number one spot to Childish Gambino, got it back, lost it to Post Malone last week, now it's got it back again. So a pretty rare, you know, three-peat occasion to be number one, lose it, regain it, lose it again, and regain it. Last song to do that was Can't Feel My Face by The Weeknd. Before that, Bruno Mars, Grenade. So, you know, pretty rare occurrence that happens only once every about 3 or 4 years. Drake leads what's a pretty tight race in the top three, really, for number one. Psycho, last week's number one, drops one spot to number two. Cardi B, Bad Bunny and J Balvin at number three once again with I Like It. I mean, the points margin between these songs is just so minimal. I mean, really, any of them had a shot at number one this week, which really sets up next week's chart as one to watch. With all three of these songs pretty firmly established, you know, just the slightest change, just a few streams here, a few radio spins there, can make the difference.
Well, what's interesting is I Like It at number three is up in all metrics this week, radio airplay, sales, and streaming, whereas of the other two songs, Nice For What and Psycho above it, only Nice For What is up in radio. It's down in every other metric, and Post Malone, Psycho, is down across the board. So based on momentum so far, you'd think I Like It has a pretty good chance next week.
I think a lot of people have been rooting for this song to get to number one. You know, it really, when Cardi's album first came out, felt like it was going to be the song of the summer. I kind of thought maybe it was a little late. That song had been getting streams basically every week. We're 10 weeks in, which in the grand scheme of things is not that late.
Well, it's as old as Nice For What. They've both been on the chart for 10 weeks, but it kind of feels like I Like It's a lot newer.
Yeah. I mean, it does feel like Nice For What because it kind of came in with the bang. The video came out. You know, God's Plan had been number one, so there was a lot of Drake at the top. With Cardi, you know, the video only came out a couple weeks ago, so that gave it some new energy, some new life. Obviously, there'd been sort of multiple songs. Drip was out there for a little bit. Be Careful was getting radio play, so it wasn't like I Like It was the only Cardi song you were hearing. So maybe that combination is going to work out in his favor, and, you know, it really just feels like the perfect summer song. I'm sure if you go down to the block parties, if you go to the beach, if you go on to graduations, this is definitely one of the hot tracks to look out for. And, who knows? Cardi could have another number one as soon as next week. But she's going to have some big competition.
Yeah, there's another song rising in the top 10, up from number 9 to number 6 this week, and number 1 in streaming this week, hits number 1 in the streaming songs chart. Juice WRLD, Lucid Dreams, goes 9 to 6, just its fifth week on the Hot 100. One of those songs, Trevor, where it really kind of highlights how there's different audiences. Right now, for big hits, the song really has almost no significant airplay so far, but number one in streaming. So we've seen some of these viral hits in recent years that absolutely huge on streaming services, but radio airplay, it's got a lot of catching up to do.
It's been the theme of this podcast for a while with some of these interviewers. I mean, we see this number, there's something out there that's really working. And in particular, if this song, you know, which does look like it has a great shot to get to number one in the next few weeks, is a lot of the stuff at the top is a little stagnant or falling down, that would be a big win for SoundCloud Rap, you know, to have really the first number one of this SoundCloud era. I mean, it's already, of course, been legitimized as a force with Gucci Gang and with, you know, songs by Lil Uzi Vert even going way back. But to actually, like, have the number one and have that be solidified in history books would be a big, big moment. And I guess speaking of SoundCloud Rap, we may see another song from a SoundCloud rapper back at the upreaches of the chart next week. maybe a little too soon to say if it would get to number one. But of course, a lot of people really rallying around XXXTentacion Sad. Of course, you know, here we are taping in New York on Tuesday, you know, one day after we learned that he had been shot and killed down in his native Florida. And you know, as we mentioned, a lot of fans rallying around a lot of his music, but Sad in particular, you know, really the song that they're gravitating towards. The song was a top 10 hit, if you remember, back earlier this year. Got to number 7 on the Hot 100, so his biggest Hot 100 hit. And, you know, I guess given, of course, the title sort of is appropriate for the mood that a lot of his fans are feeling. And, you know, just the bouncy, kind of catchy, probably way they want to remember him and his music. Seems like it's going to have a lot of support. As we tape this on Tuesday, number 1 on iTunes, number 2 on Spotify. So there's going to definitely be an impact next week.
Yeah, looking ahead to next week, too. Again, we don't have any solid numbers so far, but chance, anyway, it seems, that we could see the Carters somewhere up high on the Hot 100 together, certainly on the Billboard 200, as far as we know.
Yeah, I mean, of course, you're right. There's another whole other angle coming through is maybe is Ape Shit going to do something? Well, you know, the video is out on YouTube, as with most Beyonce videos, very well received. A lot of people really liking it. Now that it's out on wide streaming services, so not just its title exclusive, but on Spotify, on Apple, there could be definitely some momentum there. I mean, it seems like for sure the album, you would think, has a very good shot at being number one. And we know, you know, obviously Jay-Z and Beyonce are forces by themselves, but when they team up, it's usually a world-class event. And I mean, it's kind of fun. Like, even though there's not a song, I guess there's not one song out there that's been racing up the chart or like this necessarily brand new song that is debuting and about to take over. It definitely feels like this is going to be a good week for charts. How is this going to show up? How is this going to shape out?
Yeah.
This is one to watch.
And with the songs, the summer chart just having started, we said before last year was pretty much no drama start to finish. It was Despacito's race to win from the beginning all the way to the end. It was number one every week. We're 3 weeks into the songs of the summer chart so far this year. And Drake was number one first, then Post Malone. It's been number one the last 2 weeks. The way I Like It is going, that could jump up. And feels like we finally have a race for song of the summer. It's just doesn't look as clear cut this year as to what the winner could be.
And of course, we know there's so much music that's still to come. Drake's album is supposed to be out before the end of the month. We know Nicki could possibly be in this race. Her album comes out a little late in August. And, you know, I mean, the way things are going now, anybody can drop an album with just a few days' notice. I'm sure there are going to be a lot more songs out as well. So Song of the Summer could be a song we don't even know yet.
Did Beyonce and Jay-Z totally throw off your weekend where you just suddenly you had to drop everything because the album came out?
It was funny because I actually was at a bar when the news came through. And so it was like, and somebody just dropped it so casually. They're like, yo, did you see Beyonce and Jay-Z dropped an album? And it's just like, what? Wait a minute. And then, you know, it's one of those things that's the best part because we all kind of had heard that there was this project in the works and maybe it would. And then, of course, the tour had started. There was no music out. So you kind of figured, well, I mean, she had toured off Lemonade already. He had done it off 444. So why are we having a tour if there's...
Right.
But then they had done the first dates of the tour. There was nothing new. So you're kind of like, okay, I guess that's, you know, not that I'm mad to see Beyonce and Jay-Z live, but okay, there's nothing new coming with it. And then they were like, psych, here we go. I just hope the first people who saw that tour, the first 4 or 5 dates, you know, get a refund or a second leg or something, because I know they're mad.
So they weren't doing any of these new songs those first few days.
As far as I know, because, I mean, I have watched this. I have not watched the set list because if I go to the tour, I want to be surprised. So right. I didn't watch it. I can only assume they didn't because how would that have not gotten around, you know, that Beyonce debuts new song at World Tour? I mean, I hope they do something for them. Yeah. Send them a free copy of the album at least. Goodness. Also, one thing I don't want to get lost in the conversation. We talked about it a little bit before when Drake was last number one, but now that he's number one once again, 7 weeks, that brings his total to 18 for the year, 2018. How convenient is that?
Yeah.
11 weeks for God's Plan, 7 weeks for Nice for What. So within 10 weeks of Usher's one-year record back in 2004, Usher was number one for 28 weeks of the year. So with Drake at 18, the year's not halfway over. We know the album's coming.
Right.
Could that be another record the Sixth God adds to his resume?
And passes Michael Jackson this week, too, for second most weeks at number one among male artists, so 38 to 37. Not every week you can say you passed Michael Jackson for a huge number one record on the Hot 100. Drake does that this week. He's now getting closer to Usher's overall record among males, 47 weeks, so 47 to 38. And as we said, I think recently, still a little bit of time before he catches Mariah, who has the overall record, 79 weeks, number one.
So if Drake gets 10 more weeks this year, he'll tie Usher for the most in 1 year, and he'll beat Usher for the most overall. Wonder if Usher, you know, maybe Usher and Drake, Usher going to call up Drake, try to get a collab going, extend his record a little bit. We'll see.
They could do a mashup called Nice and Slow for What? All right, let's get to this week's guest on the Billboard Chart Beat podcast, someone who's been all over the top 10 of the Hot 100 for a while now, and the awards are reflecting that. Again, Grammy-nominated songwriter Justin Tranter, who again won Songwriter of the Year at the 2018 BMI Pop Music Awards recently, second consecutive year. Other awards, too, for co-writing Imagine Dragons' Believer, Linkin Park's Heavy, Julia Michaels' Issues, and Maroon 5's Cold. So, always love talking to songwriters here on the podcast. It really where a song starts. So to hear how they come up with these songs. And Justin does a lot of co-writing. So he really gets into what it's like to sometimes go into a room with someone you've never met before. And suddenly you have to get really personal and start flushing that out into a song. He's made a career of that and does it at an award-winning level. So really happy to talk to Justin Tranter again, also about his social activism. Such a great interview. It actually went so long. We're going to split it up over two parts over the next couple of weeks. So here's part one with Justin Tranter on the Billboard Chart Beat podcast.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
First things first, I'ma say all the words inside my head. I'm fired up and tired of the way that things have been. Oh,
Justin Tranter, welcome to the Billboard Chart Beat podcast.
Hello, how are you?
We're doing well. How about you?
I am fan-fucking-tastic. Thanks for having me.
Well, we're going to have, like, that's probably our first bleep on the show.
Oh, can't be.
Maybe
you've interviewed musicians and you've never had to bleep someone out before? Well, I'm honored. I'm honored to be the first bleep you'll have to bleep.
It's not the first, but it's probably the earliest in an interview.
I'm still honored to take that. I still like that title.
All right. Well, welcome, Justin. Thanks so much. So we're saying this is pretty cool. Congratulations, first off, on winning BMI's Pop Music Awards Songwriter of the Year for a second year in a row.
Well, thank you.
Does it feel old hat the second time you win, or still pretty exciting?
No, I think the second time was even more surreal. I mean, I don't know. It was like, it just feels, it's so hard to explain. You know, there's just been, to be really honest, I've just failed so many times in my life. So to have, to be Songwriter of the Year 2 years in a row, I'm just like so grateful and overwhelmed that I don't even really know how to respond to it yet.
Yeah, I was going to say, like in sports, when you ask, you know, is it harder to win a championship or sort of defend the title the next year. Everyone's always like, it's way harder to defend. All the pressure's on you. Everyone's looking at you. So I can, I'm not a famous athlete by any chance, but I can relate to what you're saying.
Yeah, it's a little, I don't know. It's just like, it's surreal in a beautiful way.
So does it set up more pressure for a three-peat? Or it's not like sports. It's you're creating art, so it's kind of different. You can't really think that.
Yeah, and like for my three-peat, I'm fortunate enough that I have like a bunch of singles coming, but they're coming a little too late in the year. But I think that the pressure's off because there's actually just no way for me to have a three-peat, I don't think, just because of the release schedule. So yeah. That's taken some pressure off. Like, yep, there's no way I'm getting three in a row. So I don't even have to think about it.
Does it change your mindset at all when you start winning these awards? Is it suddenly, do you start to think, oh, now I have to keep writing hits, or I have to do what I've been doing? Does that creep in at all? Or it's when the art starts happening, the process takes over?
Yeah, I think for me, my favorite part of writing is just about trying to like find the most urgent thing to talk about in that moment and to find the most honest thing to talk about in that moment, because, you know, for the most part when I'm writing, it's very rarely about my life anymore. It's you know, if I have a young co-writer, you know, that early 20s intensity can never be rivaled by someone who's about to be 38. So, or if I'm writing with the artist, obviously I want it to be their story. I want it to be their life. I want them to hopefully love the song so much they take it all over the world and sing it all over the world. And so, all those like sort of like pressures and all that kind of go away the minute you just get in the room and you start having the conversation about somebody's life and about what they're thinking, what they're feeling, what they want. And the minute that starts happening, you know, my creative, you know, antennas go up, and I just kind of like dig right into the truth. Even if it's fun, even if it's like a fun, goofy, sexy song, I'm still trying to find like, you know, the truth in it. So all that crazy pressure kind of goes away.
There was an interesting point you made about age. You say that there's a very different energy when you're writing with someone who's early 20s as opposed to someone who's maybe been doing this for 20 years or so.
Well, I just think it's not even about how long you've been doing it. I think it's just like in the emotional situation of it all. Like, I know when I was writing songs about, you know, boyfriends or ex-boyfriends when I was 20, it was very serious. You know, like it was, these songs had to be written, else I was gonna die. And like that sort of like those emotional extremes, you know, the older I get, I'm just like, you know, I'd rather die than date. So those feelings kind of like go away, or the, I don't know, I just think when we're young, the creativity is so raw and so necessary, that now that I'm older, I have so much joy in kind of helping other people channel their rawness and try to elevate it and try to focus it the best that I can. It's just a different way to look at it.
How do you write? I always like to ask that to songwriters. Does the music come first, lyrics, combination of both? And obviously you work with so many different artists. It could be a different answer for everybody.
Yeah, it definitely is different all the time. I you know, because I do want to make sure that, especially if I'm writing with the artist directly, I want to make sure they feel comfortable. Or if it is a new collaborator, a new songwriter who's not an artist, just a songwriter, I want to, you know, kind of learn how they do it and kind of get into their world and their realm and just try to make that the best I can. But for me, it's definitely hard to start if I don't know where we're aiming lyrically. Like, I need to know the main lyrical gist of it. I need to know the main story we're telling before I can even really think about what the melody is supposed to be or think about any of that. Just for my brain, just because it's hard to, you know, until we know what we're talking about, how do we know what it should sound like? But that's just for me personally. A lot of people will just go and freestyle melodies, or, you know, producers will build out amazing tracks on their own. But if I had a preferred way of doing it, that's how it would be. I like to know where we're aiming lyrically and then go from there.
And with, you know, all forms of art, whether it's writing or performing, you know, you can always kind of tweak with it a little bit until someone forces you to stop. How do you know when a song is done?
That's a really good question. I think for me, it's like, that's one of my strengths, is being like, okay, this feels good, that is good, this is done. But, you know, I'm not a I do produce, but not often. Normally I'm just writing, and when I do produce, it's in the old school sense of, like, you know, getting, you know, musicians together and players together and blah, blah, blah. But I think for me, it's kind of, I just can tell when it's done, and it's normally pretty quick, especially if I'm not dealing with the production at all. It's just about, like, the lyric and melody. I can pretty quickly know when it's done. And normally when the song is good, for me personally, it happens pretty quick. At least the meat of it will happen quick. And then maybe a couple of days later, you realize you could, the pre-chorus could be better, or the bridge could be simpler, and then you go back and tweak it. But for me, like, the meat of the song, if the meat of the song doesn't get done in the first couple hours, then it's not worth it.
And you've written with so many people, Justin. Is it, can you sometimes tell if that connection is there, or if you have to fight for it a little bit more? Or there have even been times when you've gone into writing sessions and you just kind of thought, this just isn't going to work?
I think most writers have those experiences. I'm very fortunate that, for me, I view that, like, part of the creativity as sort of like winning the room, I call it. Like, I'm going to, like, get everybody to feel as confident and comfortable and excited as possible about what we're doing, to hopefully get through the awkwardness and oddness that can be there. Because you're walking into a room with a complete stranger sometimes. Maybe everyone's a stranger. There could be a whole, you know, the whole room could be strangers. And you're supposed to do something that's pretty intimate. You know what I mean? Like, talking about the stuff that we talk about is very intimate. And you're having to, you know, maybe suggest something that sucks in front of strangers. And maybe something that you think is amazing, but the co-writer doesn't, and then that creates, like, a weirdness. And but I've been pretty fortunate in that I view that part of it as just as important part of the creative process as actual writing. So for me, I put a lot of energy and experience into making sure that things go emotionally smoothly, if that makes any sense.
Song by Song, the four other awards, in addition to Songwriter of the Year, you won four more awards for co-writing these four different songs. So just to go by one by one, Justin, just kind of talking about the process, how they came together. Imagine Dragons, Believer. That's you write with a lot of pure pop artists, and Imagine Dragons, they have pop elements, but, you know, ultimately a rock band. Was that different at all?
Well, I come from a band background, so I was in the band called Sunny Precious Weapons for like 10 years.
Right.
It was like a glam punk band that our last album ended up being kind of like alternative popish, but which is what led me to pop writing. It was just somehow I was naturally leaning there. So I really understand the band dynamic, and I understand the how important this sort of there's something interesting about when you're dealing with a band, their fans are in a lot of ways can be a lot more sensitive to, like, how it generally sounds. They want it to sound like that band forever. And of course you can progress and you can evolve, and you should progress and evolve. But I was really aware of how you need to, like, stay true to that. But what's really funny about that song is that me and Matt Men and Robin went to Vegas to work with Dan Reynolds to write, you know, cause he doesn't normally write with people. He's one of the best writers alive. He writes alone, you know? And we went there to write songs to pitch to other people, because he does that sometimes as well. And the first two songs we wrote together, he ended up keeping on his album, which were Start Over, and then the second song he wrote was Believer. Then we went and wrote a lot more, and we ended up with four songs in the album and a bunch of other amazing music. And, you know, once we got to Believer, I could sort of tell sonically it was living in Imagine Dragons land. And I could tell that he was feeling like this was probably his, just because of the vibe of it and blah, blah. And we, like, really hammered out the chorus together. And then when it got to the verses, when I could tell that it was his, I gave him space. Definitely was a good sounding board for everything, and making sure I was pushing the melodies to be as strong as they could and all that good stuff and the lyrics. But it was very clearly became his story, and this was his moment. It was his. And I very fortunately realized that and didn't get in the way and didn't fuck it up.
Yeah.
I just kind of let him write the story that he needed to write. So, you know, which I think is great, because then this song, it's really his. And I just was there to make it the best that it could be, but this is his story. So that's how that one came about.
You mentioned Semi-Precious Weapons and going from being in a band, and I know you were touring with Gaga back then at the total height of her pop craziness. So you were part of this whole tour cycle when she was, you know, maybe the biggest pop artist in the world. Seeing that up front, did that actually have a reverse effect on you and made you think, I want to be more behind the scenes. I want to be a writer. Maybe that wasn't really for you?
I mean, it's interesting. You know, our band was known for our live show. Like that's how we paid our bills. That's how we got any sort of decent feedback from the press. It was never from our records. It was always from the live show, which is funny that now that I'm a songwriter, but, I was always writing songs, but now you know what I'm saying? While it was happening, I loved it and it was fucking amazing. And like, you know, whether it was smaller headline tours or whether it was opening for Gaga or opening for Kesha or any of the awesome things we got to do. While it was happening, I loved it. But once, you know, I fell into songwriting for other people, I don't want to say an accident, because it was a shit ton of hard work, but the initial decision to do it was an accident, where the band was signed to Epic, which was our third record deal on Epic, and they wouldn't put the album out. And the person that had signed us to our publishing deal had left the company, and this young, brilliant, amazing woman came in to take his place, named Katie Vinton. And I went and met with her about the band, and you know, I had sent her the new album that Epic wouldn't put out, and she loved the album, and her husband was a fan of our older albums as well, so she was aware of what we did. And she just said, well, you know, I don't work at Epic Records, I can't help you get your album out, sadly, but I work at a publisher and I could put you in sessions to write songs with and for other people. And I luckily said, yes, let's do that. And I just started going to every fucking session that she could find for me. And so it wasn't that, like, the artist life, I was like, oh, this isn't for me. And, you know, seeing fame up close, I wasn't thinking, oh, this isn't for me. It was more just kind of, that was the only opportunity I had left. And obviously all I really care about is making music and hoping that people hear it. But now that I am here, I don't want anything to do with the artist life. You know, like, touring is fun. The hour you're on stage is really fun, but the rest of the time, you're literally, 23 of 24 hours, you're doing nothing. You know, you're traveling or sitting or waiting or sitting or traveling or sitting and waiting. And then when you're the singer, you're like terrified about your vocal situation.
Right.
And it's a lot. So it all worked out. It wasn't like a master plan, and nothing, you know, none of it was a reaction to anything that I saw. It was just kind of, this was the option. And I like to work insanely hard, and this was the only option I had to work at, and I am fucking grateful.
Well, I think it worked out pretty well, if I have to say so myself.
I am not complaining, I promise. I'm not complaining.
Two questions just based off something you talked about earlier. One thing that you mentioned is, you said basically these days there's at least three people writing in the room together. You know, a lot of pop purists, you know, rock purists would argue, you know, that's what's the problem with music, is there's too many songwriters. The songs are too, you know, they don't stand out. They don't have, you know, enough flavor. What's your response to that when people say, you know, there's too many cooks in the kitchen making songs these days?
My response would be, those people are fucking idiots. I mean, I think a lot of that's based in misogyny. A lot of times they're speaking on female pop artists who have a lot of co-writers. So that's just like, it's based in their idea of a genius as someone who sits alone in their room and is tortured and writes a song by themselves. So I think that's part, sometimes part of the conversation, not always, but that's sometimes part of it. And then I think the other part of it too, is that things are just restructured differently now, where back in the day, a producer wouldn't get publishing. back in the day, if you hired a guitar player who came in and wrote an amazing riff to your song, they wouldn't get publishing. So now I think that, you know, everyone's getting a little bit more respected for what they do, and so you'll end up seeing all these different names on the songwriting credits, which before it'd be like, you know, oh, well, this person wrote the chords and they wrote the lyric and melody, so it's only their song. But now it's like, well, no, if you make a beat to that chord and melody that's really hooky, you're going to get publishing. If you write a riff to that chord and melody that's really hooky, you're going to get publishing. So I think it's just the landscape of how people are credited has changed, and I think that people just want any excuse to be nostalgic and hate the future. So that was my not so subtle answer to that question.
That is great. Kind of linking off with that, another argument that's come up in the past couple of years in particular as pop music and the number of artists continue to grow is a lot of people think that, you know, if you look at the writing credits on a lot of songs, a lot of artists get credit. And a lot of people have big reservations about whether certain artists, I'm not going to, you know, name particular names, but they get more credit on a song than they actually contribute. As someone who's been in the room with a lot of artists who, you know, get singer-songwriter credit, what percent of artists or how many actually do contribute and get the ratio is right between what they're credited for and what they actually contribute?
Yeah, I mean, you know, that's a really, really tricky question. You know, the majority of artists that I've been in the room with, you know, if they're actually in the room and they're writing, you know, even if they're not, they wouldn't identify as like a full on, you know, superstar songwriter. It's still their story. It's still their vibe. It's still their essence. It's still their direction. It's still the creation is based around them, and they're in the room and they're a part of the process. And so they 100% deserve writing credit. And you know, of course, when you have writers like, you know, I've been fortunate enough to, I was, you know, with Gwen Stefani this morning, and that woman obviously writes her ass off, but you know, she likes the process of collaborating, and so I am lucky enough that I get to go and collaborate with her at 9 a.m. But, you know, it's like, I think it's just interesting why people obsess over it. I feel like I don't understand it's like people are looking for things to be angry about, and so you have these, like, you know, pop purists that are like, going through credits, which I love, by the way. I love people that care about the credits and care about all the details, because I was that person when I was a kid. I knew every songwriter, I knew every producer, I knew every session drummer. I was obsessed with all of it. I mean, I didn't know them personally. I knew their names from the credits.
Right.
I lived in the suburbs of Chicago. I didn't know anybody, but I find it interesting that people want to have these conversations online about, like, oh, well, I don't think that bitch actually wrote, and I don't think that so-and-so actually wrote. And again, most of these conversations are about female artists, which I think, again, I think when people want to have these conversations, they should check their misogyny before going on, like, an online tirade.
You know, that's such a great point, because I mean, when I look at, you know, Beyonce has gotten that flack for years, I'm sure there's others. I'm a big Beyonce fan, so I know that that's been one of, you know, people's sticking points with her. Yeah. Whatever. I didn't really think about, you know, how female, you know, driven or female targeted all that hatred is. You don't really hear about, I mean, any of the major male acts, you know, Justin Timberlake, or, I mean, we know, like, Ed Sheeran writes, we know Justin Bieber writes, but It's always the women who get dissected about, well, did she read, you know, is she ghostwriters? Are you sure? It's interesting.
I mean, yeah, it's interesting too, because, like, there's definitely, you know, this conversation definitely involves both genders, and yet dudes never get called out for it. So that, to me, it definitely shows the misogyny, because there are definitely male pop stars who, you know, will make changes to a song and then get their publishing. When a woman makes changes to a song and gets her publishing, all of a sudden the internet's really pissed. And so obviously I'm not going to name any names, but I find it funny that the dudes always get away carefree.
You can't give us that tease, man. There's got to be somebody who's...
No, I'm just, and I don't even have it. It's just like, it's the whole, it's more of a cultural conversation. You know what I mean? I think that's the important thing to look at here.
Sure.
Well, that kind of gets into your speech. I promise we are going to ask more about the other songs that you also won awards for, just to ask about them. But that's your speech. You win this award, and you weren't talking about the songs. You're talking about gun violence in this country and LGBTQ issues. And you've called the administration racist and homophobic. You can tell in this interview you're not holding back. You're going to say what's on your mind. So it's just kind of interesting that you use that platform to talk about what's really much more important than what I'm asking, how certain songs are written.
I mean, I thank you. I think that's a compliment. I just feel like I've always been outspoken. I've always, taken, art and activism as one very seriously. You know, when I was in high school, I directed and wrote a big multimedia performance. I went to an art high school, and I created this show with my friends. All my friends helped me, and we made this show to raise money for HIV and AIDS charities in Chicago. And that was, in 1997. And that show still happens. Well, the kids create their own show every year, but that tradition, the AIDS benefit tradition at my high school, still happens now, 21, 22 years later. So, ever since I was a baby, this stuff was really important to me. And I feel like if we're going to have any sort of privilege, I identify as gender nonconforming, but I walk through the world with, white cis male privilege. Obviously, I'm very obviously queer to most people, but I still am a white cis male. And so, and by the way, for anyone who's listening who doesn't understand what I'm saying, cisgendered means that you identify with the gender the doctor told you you were when you were born. So cis, the root of cis means same, and obviously there's transgender, and the root of trans means transition and transcendence and transcendental and all those magical things. So, I have this privilege, and now that I have success, and now that success equals a platform and success equals money, if I'm not paying that privilege forward and if I'm not using the platform that I've been given, then what's the point of being alive? So, for me, when I won the first year of BMI, I gave a speech about how, we need a lot more queer people involved in pop writing, and that we need a lot more women involved in pop writing, especially women of color, is really, really lacking in this business. And obviously, for many years, my main collaborator was Julia Michaels. I mean, she would still be my main collaborator, but she's traveling the world, taking over the whole planet. But, she's a young Latina woman, and I'm a middle-aged queer man, and we, have kicked ass. So I was just trying to use that as an example, that it's not only what's right for society to make sure that you're opening doors, more diverse doors, and you're opening doors for people that don't have that happen for them because of the world's fucked up standards, but also because it's good for business. Julia was so amazing at writing songs for Selena because they were both the same age and going through a lot of the same stuff. And so when you have a young woman telling a young woman's story, it's going to feel a lot more honest. It's going to feel a lot more real. The things that I've been through as a queer person, I think that I really understand the underdog perspective really, really well, which is, I think, where songs like Centuries and Believer come from. And then obviously this year I spoke about gun violence because I think that conversation that's been going on forever in this country is coming to some sort of head, hopefully coming to a head in a good way. But I feel like, the music business, music affects culture so deeply, right? And culture is what actually changes politics. So if we can push culture forward, and if all the people that have been given this amazing privilege to affect culture, if we can push that culture forward, in any way, I think we have a responsibility to do it.
You were talking about the energy that a young songwriter brings. They're kind of seeing that with, we've talked a lot on the podcast about the Parkland Choir. They were just on the Billboard Music Awards. When you see some of those kids, are you more hopeful than not that this young generation that really seems like they are maybe moving the needle on a lot of these issues, maybe more than we've seen other recent generations?
Yeah, I think you're right. I think that we've hit a real turning point, and I always am hopeful because I think that that's a choice that you have to make. But you have to be hopeful, and you still have to keep fighting, because if you just say you're hopeful and then you don't fight, then like, what's the point of being hopeful? But with these, you know, these kids in Parkland, and you know, kids all over the country now, with you know, the way that their social media can connect them and the way their social media can inform them, I think that we're in a really amazing time. And I don't like to say that, you know, a lot of people say, oh, well, the good thing about Trump is that, you know, it's really, you know, inspired people to get involved and you know, take their democracy back. And that for me is a hard thing, because when you have, you know, immigrants in this country who are being locked up and then kicked out, and their families being separated, and you have, you know, hate crimes have increased. I might have the number wrong, but I'm pretty sure hate crimes have increased up like by 40%. When all these horrible things are happening, I don't really want to say, oh, but at least people are waking up, because I would much rather, you know, families weren't being torn apart than people being more vocal on social media. Right. You know what I mean? Like, but there definitely is a change that I feel, and I think that's awesome.
You know, I don't want to necessarily make you sort of the music spokesperson for this whole movement, but you know, a lot of artists and even songwriters, producers, anybody in the industry, people have gotten some flack for people who have seen, you know, throughout the last 18 months, you know, even the election cycle, a lot of things were going on, and there were a lot of artists and folks who stayed quiet on the sidelines, didn't say anything. You know, obviously with your position as being such an advocate, do you have anything, what do you say to those people who are in these huge positions that choose not, you know, to shut off, not engage, not do anything? You know, how do you take that?
Well, I think it's a tricky question, right? And it's a tricky thing to talk about, because if your dream was to just make music, and that dream came true for you, does it mean that you have to speak on everything, and that you have to get involved in all these things? You know, I think people can only answer that for themselves. You know, for me personally, given any success, I was doing this stuff before I had success. So now that I have success, and I'm not a famous person, I just work with famous people. So, you know, I don't have a lot of the same pressures as someone, you know, I have 140,000 followers on Instagram. You know, there's someone who has 100 million. Obviously, they have a lot more pressure on their celebrity than I do. I'm not even a celebrity. I'm just a songwriter. So it's hard to say, but I do think that when like people's lives are being threatened, or you know, when there's a vice president who believes in electrocuting me, you know, I feel like we've got to when a democracy is actually being threatened, I feel like if you don't speak up, you're fucking up. But and again, that's just how I feel. You know, I can't, someone else's music dreams coming true, they need to deal with that the way that they need to do. I would never want to say that somebody should do something just because their dreams came true.
I'll say two lines out of that I actually really enjoyed. One is more of like an Instagram bio: I'm not famous, I just work with famous people. That's a great sentence. Not to downplay what we just mentioned, but
no, it's quite all right.
When I heard that, I was like, that's catchy. And then the second one, if you're not speaking up, you're fucking up. Is that what it was?
Yes.
That's like a good sort of resistance T-shirt. I feel like I could see that on a shirt somewhere.
Maybe I'll sell it for charity.
We're getting lyrics here. I think we're almost co-writing here. There's some good lines.
Well, I think I said it. He just pointed it out. So I don't really know if it's a full co-write.
Yeah, that's
well, isn't that how co-writing works now? You spark the idea, Trevor. You get a small percentage.
I got the question that got the juices going, you know.
But does this inspire you at all to write an out-and-out protest song, or is it just not the way, whether it's the artist you're working with, or it's just, you hear something like, "This is America," is that just not, when you're compelled to write something that socially minded?
Yeah, I mean, I definitely write stuff that's socially minded. It's just about finding the right home for it, or, you know, if I'm obviously with the artist, I think that I've written a couple things that are that social media that just haven't come out yet. You know, I work with an amazing artist named Shea Diamond, who is a trans woman of color. And she, you know, got into music through activism. Her voice is unbelievable. Her lyrics are amazing. But these songs that she would sing at protest rallies are kind of how she got known in New York City, which is how I found her and signed her and started working with her. So through Shea, I get to do a lot of, even if I don't write it, I'm just executive producing and A&Ring and blah, blah, blah. But I have co-written a lot on the album too. Through her project, we get to do a lot of addressing the bullshit, which is really, really inspiring and very fulfilling.
So pull me closer. Why don't you pull me close? Why don't you come on over? I can't just let you go. Why don't you just meet me in the middle? I'm losing my mind just a little. So why don't you just meet me in the middle? In the middle. Baby, why don't you just meet me in the middle?
All right, and that was The Middle by Zed, Maren Morris, and Gray, which is going to lead us into this week's flashback. We're going to take a trip back and look at The Middle. No, not that middle. Another song called The Middle. The middle that goes a little more like this. Hopefully you were exposed to that song long before the Taylor Swift Apple commercial. But if you weren't, that is a song called The Middle by Jimmy Eat World, which was a big hit back in 2002, right around this time, hitting number 5 on the Hot 100 this very week, 16 years ago. Reached a peak of number 5, which actually is the same rank that this new middle, the triumvirate of Zed, Maren Morris, Gray, their song also getting to number 5 earlier this year. So look at that. Two songs, same name, hitting the same rank on the Hot 100. That's a little specific, so we're not going to quite do matching ranks, but we are going to do matching titles. So we're going to look down this week's Hot 100, some of the big hits of years past that share titles with songs on this week's chart. Before anyone gets too excited, no, there is no other song called Lucid Dreams, as far as we know. There is no other song called IDGAF.
Yeah.
So we're going to start at the top of the chart, jump around, work our way down, and do these according to this week's ranking order. So here we go. We'll start things off at number 3, though, with I Like It, Cardi B, Bad Bunny, J Balvin. Pretty straightforward title. Now, actually, the highest charting song on the Hot 100 to be called I Like It. If you remember, not too long ago, back in 2010, there was a song out there by Enrique Iglesias featuring Pitbull, also called I Like It. That song got to number 4. That was the beginning of like a little sort of mini resurgence for Enrique after a couple of years. He had that song, and then he had Tonight I'm Loving You. So definitely two big top 5 hits for him. In terms of I Like It, he had it for a while. Now he ceded that to another sort of Latin contingent.
Right.
Bad Bunny, J Balvin, and the one, the only, Cardi B.
Go back, if people remember, who are old enough to remember, 1989. This is the song that had the record before Enrique. Dino song I Like It. It's number 7 hit in the summer of 1989.
That's the way it has to be, cause that's the way I like it. That's the way it has to be, cause that's the way I like it.
So the middle, number 8. Just below the top 10, number 13 this week, up for number 14, got to number 11. If it hits the top 10, Friends by Marshmello and Anne-Marie would become the second top 10 hit called Friends in the Hot 100's history. Before Dino in 1989, Friends by Jody Wadley with Eric B. and Rakim was the number 9 hit that year.
Two spots below Friends, we're looking at a song called Mine by Bozzy. I guess I'm pretty good with the 2010 year because we're going to flash back to that once again. There was a song by a current Hot 100 hitmaker, Taylor Swift. Single by the name of Mine, which was the lead track ahead of Speak Now, her third album. That song got to number 3, debuted there on the Hot 100. Big song in the moment because that was Taylor's lead track from the album After Fearless, so that had won Album of the Year at the Grammys. A lot of anticipation there. Speak Now went on to sell 1 million-plus copies in its first week and set Taylor up, really, for this huge superstar turn.
I can see it now. Do you remember we were sitting there by the water? You put your arm around me for the first time. You made a rebel of a careless man's careful daughter. You are the best thing that's ever been.
All right, I'm going to go back to the 80s. Number 19, Camila Cabello, our former number 6 hit, Never Be the Same. There's no way you know this one, Trevor. 1980 was the number 15 hit. Same title, different composition, Christopher Cross.
If it's not Sailing or Arthur's Theme, then nah.
I think I figured out the secret to how Camila Cabello has hit singles. So Never Be the Same, originally a song by Christopher Cross. Before that, she had obviously Havana. I remember we mentioned on the podcast that Kenny G had a song called Havana in the 90s. So she takes titles by yacht rock icons.
You got it. He cracked the code. It's like she lost all her powers. Gary figured out the trade secret. It's like the Wizard of Oz when you know, Toto pulls the curtain back. All right, a couple more. We'll flip it back to number 22 this week. Selena fans excited to see Back to You climbing up the chart. Maybe this one slipped under the radar a little bit. Louis Tomlinson with Digital Farm Animals. Bebe Rexha just last year called Back to You a top 40 hit.
Oh, you stress me out. You kill me. You drag me down. You fuck me up. We're on the ground. We're screaming. I don't know.
Right near Selena Gomez at number 24, Rockstar by Post Malone, featuring 21 Savage, back up this week, former 8-week number one. If we go back to 2007, really was a rock song by Nickelback. Rockstar got to number 6 in 2007 on the Hot 100.
All right, and we'll wrap things up here. Kind of tie a nice little bow on it with the song Heaven by Kane Brown. Now, remember, we started this off, we were talking about how The Middle, which is a song that's a hit this year, it's also the same name as a song by Jimmy Eat World from 2002. Also that same year, DJ Sammy and Yanu having a hit with a song called Heaven, which hit number 8 that August. That song, actually a cover, of course, of another song called Heaven that one done by Bryan Adams, which conveniently hit number one this week back in 1985. Two versions of Heaven, very different, so I guess depending on what era you grew up in, you really have an attachment maybe with one or the other.
Or if you only know the 2002 version, really two versions of that. There was the dance version and also what was called the Candlelight Mix. So they realized that they kind of hit both audiences by having the ballad version, having the up-tempo version. It really helped make it a hit all around.
Kind of probably, you know, if you knew the Adams version, maybe you like lean towards more the AC version.
Yeah.
By the time 2002 rolled around, that'd be 17 years later. And of course, you know, I mean, 2002 was a big year for some of that electro kind of dance music. Kylie Minogue, you know, had been pretty big around that time. Some of those, you know, music by Madonna, some of those beats were still pretty banging. So got a hit out of that too. All right. So from Zedd, Maren Morris, Gray to Jimmy Eat World to Bryan Adams. There you go. Some of the songs on the Hot 100. Both a past and present that share the same name.
Yeah, it shows that you don't always have to come up with the most original title. You can pick something that's worked, and in pop music, there's sort of a language of its own where some of these phrases, like Back to You, I Like It, just kind of come around. You find different ways to say it, and it's a whole new hit all over again.
I like that, Gary. Yeah.
All right, that's this week's Billboard Chappie podcast. Join us again next week. We'll have more with Justin Tranter. We'll look at the top 10 next week. We'll see if Drake is still number one. We'll see if I Like It by Cardi B, Bad Bunny, and J Balvin can maybe get to number one. Again, Juice WRLD, Lucid Dreams is really gaining strongly. Looks like a contender for number one next week. And maybe Jay-Z and Beyonce could be in the top 10 as well. We'll find out.
Yeah, a lot of action coming our way. Also, don't forget about some songs that came out the middle of last week that could also make a dent. In particular, Ariana Grande, Nicki Minaj, Bed. Maybe that makes its way on the Hot 100. They've pretty much been kind of like Jay-Z and Beyonce, a pretty consistent team up over the past couple of years. So you know, maybe there's like that's the new frontier. You know, you get your singer rapper collaboration and y'all ride or die to the end.
All right, let's wrap with one more title that shared with a previous hit. And this is really just a way for me to play one more 80s song, Trevor, from 1988. Back at number 29 on the Hot 100 this week is "Wait" by Maroon 5. White Lion had a big hit at number 7 in 1988, springtime. Totally different song called "Wait" when hair bands were really big. It's White Lion wrapping things up and "Wait" on the Billboard Choppy podcast.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.